So I've been thinking a lot about depression lately, not just because I'm depressed, but because I think we're ignoring the real cause of the depression epidemic, capitalism. And recently, psychiatrists have argued that emotional distress is way more common in nations with neoliberal capitalist policies. And this problem goes way deeper than you might think. It actually goes all the way down to the structures of our brains, which is terrifying, but it also might be the key to fighting back. And this is way more than just an interesting academic question for me, because as I mentioned before, I am depression. Now, most of us assume that depression happens because we have chemicals in our brain and sometimes they get imbalanced, or we have more or less of certain things, you know, stuff like serotonin, norepinephrine, and dopamine. And these sort of imbalances lead to depression. These chemical explanations have led to antidepressants being one of the primary treatments for those who suffer from depression. Full disclosure, until recently, I was a member of the Wellbutrin gang. Let me know what your antidepressant of choice is in the comments, you know. Don't forget to smash that anxiety button. Second most common mode of treatment is some form of talk therapy. These days, CBT tends to be the most popular. This too is a thing that I have done to attempt to be less sad and more good. And these treatments are as profitable as they are popular. In 2024, the antidepressant market here in America is worth $18.7 billion. It's projected to be worth $37.9 billion by 2034. According to another report, on average, Americans are spending $208.93 on therapy each month. Because let's be real, your insurance ain't paying for that shit. But according to psychiatrist Joanne Moncrief, author of The Myth of the Chemical Cure, none of the situations we call mental disorders have been convincingly shown to arise from a biological disease. Academic David Matthews writes that despite its prominence, little evidence exists to support the premise that biology is the primary cause of the development of mental illness. Now, let's be clear here. This is not some like grifter logic in which medication is bad for you and all you really need is a positive attitude and a regimen of supplements that are not approved by anyone anywhere at any time for anything. Rather, they're pointing out the way in which the focus on individual and biological explanations ignore the social and economic factors that are, for lack of a better term, making us all feel like ass. Because when we treat mental health like a wholly biological problem, we end up treating it like a wholly individual problem. And this all leads to the expansion of a mental health and wellness industry where happiness is your responsibility and you're always only one book or video or podcast or supplement or app away from getting closer to achieving that goal. And of course, underlying all of this is the logic that once you're able to cure your individual depression, you're going to get back to what really matters, being good at capitalism. But how is capitalism affecting our mental health? You know, in particular, how is it making us more depressed?
Pull back the curtain on capitalism, man. What do you see back there?
So the basic idea here is that under neoliberal capitalism, which is the dominant social and economic form in the West, social and public resources have been eroded and privatized in the name of efficiency and profit. And this has created increasing economic precarity and scarcity, especially for younger folks. You know, because when going to the doctor or getting a college degree leads to insurmountable debt, when owning a home becomes a fantasy from a bygone era, when jobs feel harder and harder to come by, well, we all end up feeling pretty bad. Now, according to psychiatrist Anna Zara, this is why we see such a troubling rise in depression. Now, she writes that with less control of their work and fewer opportunities for recognition and promotion, workers often derive less meaning in work, which causes increased anxiety and depression. She goes on to write that neoliberalism encourages individualism, which is decreased emphasis on the need for community and social connection for fulfillment. So, not only does neoliberalism create the conditions for depression and anxiety, in encouraging individualism, it then erodes the type of human community that we need to avoid feeling socially isolated. The thing that really sucks about all of this is that we treat this state of affairs as normal, which means that people and brains that struggle to thrive under these conditions are considered to be abnormal. This leads to folks being labeled mentally ill just because they fail to thrive in circumstances that are fundamentally unjust. And this is where medication can become problematic. It's often sought out and prescribed as a way to help patients become more successful in the neoliberal capitalist society. And this implies that not assimilating to the desires and aims of capitalism makes one ill. This really hits home for me. Many of the times I've had to seek out help for my mental health have been because work has been really hard. You know, I felt that fundamental incompatibility between how I was feeling internally and how I was expected to perform externally. You know, in a world where we derive so much of our social and economic value from our ability to be good at doing job, struggling to do so can make you feel like a failure. In a recent study in Frontiers of Sociology, the authors write, "For the past few decades, healthy brains were often considered to be individualist and selfish computational machines which process information in order to maximize personal utility via decision making." And the fields of psychiatry and neuroscience have themselves embraced this sort of picture of mental health, in which a healthy brain is basically just a profit-seeking algorithm, which makes people like Jeff Bezos and Mark Zuckerberg mentally healthy. This makes those of us who aren't wired for capitalism then feel like we're falling short, you know, like we are lazy or stupid and just incapable of keeping up with everything and everyone we see around us. Professor Michael Krauss-Franson, I probably didn't say that right, writes that depression makes manifest the contemporary subject's alienation in its most extreme and pathological form, meaning that depression describes the mental state of those who feel most out of sync with contemporary capitalist life. Is that you? Is that you? Is that you? Is that you?
Is that you?
Okay, so how do we make sense of all this in light of our more common sense understanding of depression? Now, David Matthews writes that mental health under capitalism evolves from a dialectical relationship between the material conditions of capitalism and the corporeal and hence material nature of the individual. So rather than being either wholly caused by social and economic factors or caused wholly by biological and psychological factors, the two are inherently related. You know, you might have some genetic predisposition towards depression, but it might not be a problem until a set of social conditions, you know, unemployment, debt, housing cost, exacerbate that underlying biological predisposition. Looking at things in this dialectical way is especially important right now in the United States, as our new Secretary of Health and Human Services, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., is radically changing our public health approach to mental illnesses like depression. Because, you know, if you don't understand what's going on here, we might think that he's doing something that's kind of good. So looking at things in this dialectical way is especially important right now here in the United States, as our new Secretary of Health and Human Services, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., is radically changing our public health approach to mental illnesses like depression. And you know, things are getting weird. Look at this recent article I found that's titled, "Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Says Antidepressants Are Harder to Quit Than Heroin. Is He Right?" And things get weirder. More recently, I found this headline that said RFK Jr. is axing 10,000 employees at the health department in dramatic restructuring. I mean, of course, this is the department that's largely responsible for how we manage mental health services in America. But it's confusing when you see other headlines covering the same story from different sources. Like this headline that says that these HHS cuts will save Americans $1.8 billion annually. So how can this same story be covered so differently? It's because most media organizations prioritize clicks over clear and accurate information. You know, they focus on sensational stories and controversy rather than careful discussions of the issues. Now, I found all of these articles on Ground News. Ground News is where I go every day to catch up on the news, and they're sponsoring this video. Their app and website pulls stories from across the globe and it puts them all in one place so you can get the full picture. You know, this HHS story has been reported by over 400 sources, and Ground News then shows me where each source leans politically with their bias distribution chart. They also show me the factuality rating, which scores the reliability of reporting, and then even shows me who owns that source. All these factors shape how stories are framed, and then taken all together, they let you see how bias impacts coverage. The feature I find myself going back to over and over on Ground News is their blind spot feed. Now, this highlights stories that are being disproportionately reported by either side of the political spectrum. It gives me a look at what's being talked about outside my own little bubble. And it gives me context on some of the debates I see happening online and lets me know what's happening on the right-leaning side of things. As it becomes harder than ever to feel confident in the reliability of the news that we see on the internet, Ground News gives me the tools to think critically, not only about what's happening in the world, but about how it's being covered and why. Now, if you want to check it out, go to ground.news/Michael Burns and try it for yourself. When you use my link, you'll get 40% off their Vantage plan, which is what I use to get unlimited access to all of these features. I think Ground News is doing important work, and I really appreciate them for supporting my channel. I hope you'll go check them out. Okay, kids, let's get back to depression. But there's another wrinkle here, because recent neuroscience is at odds with that picture of our brain that says we're basically wired to just be good at capitalism. In her book, What Should We Do With Our Brain?, Catherine Malibu writes about how the science of neuroplasticity fundamentally changes how we should be understanding our mental health and our relations to capitalism. Paraphrasing Marx, Malibu writes that humans make their own brain but they do not know that they make it. And we make our brain via the process of neuroplasticity, which is the brain's organic capacity to change and adapt on its own. For Malibu, it's dangerous to be ignorant of our brain's plasticity, because when we do this, we continue to believe in the rigidity of an entirely genetically determined brain. This is dangerous for at least two reasons. First, it lets us believe the myth that our brain is just one particular way. You know, if we're biologically depressed or anxious, well, there's nothing we can do about it except for take more pills. But again, for real, I've taken pills. I take them sometimes if they're helpful. That's still good. Now, second, it perpetuates a vision of the brain that replicates the structures of capitalism, so that the healthy brain is just the one that moves like a boss. I'm the biggest boss that you've seen thus far. Or something. Basically, it means that your brain resembles the logical functioning of like Andrew Tate. Malibu argues that our task is to figure out how we can stop our consciousness of the brain from simply coinciding with the spirit of capitalism. This has very real effects on our lives. Because the neoliberal vision of the brain as adaptable is just a vision of the brain that's good adapting to what your boss or the market wants you to do. You know, adaptability is employability. Malibu describes employability as a neo-management concept that indicates the capacity to respond to a world in motion by a supple use of abilities. So just as the neoliberal brain can use CBT or medication to adapt to its mental health struggles, the capitalist worker can adapt to the demands of the modern labor market. But rather than adaptability, Malibu thinks the power of the plastic brain is its ability to explode. She writes that perhaps we ought to relearn how to enrage ourselves, to explode against a culture of docility, of amenity, of the effacement of all conflict, even as we live in a state of permanent war. You know, rather than adapting to the system, this looks like fighting against that system, saying no to its demands, you know, refusing to let that system tell us that somehow the very logic of neoliberalism is just built into our brains. And Malibu calls on us to visualize the possibility of saying no to an afflicting economic, political, and mediatic culture that celebrates only the triumph of flexibility, blessing obedient individuals who have no greater merit than of knowing how to bow their heads with a smile. So it's not only that the fight against modern depression is political, it's that our brain, at least according to Malibu, is equipped to win that fight. At this point, at least to me, it's pretty clear that depression is a political problem. But the way we've commonly understood depression can obscure or even distract from that political nature. And the consequence of this, according to Joanna Moncrief, is that locating the source of problems in individual biology, blaming the brain, impedes exploration of social and political issues. In other words, when we're also focused on understanding depression as an individual biological phenomenon to be treated at the individual level, we end up ignoring the fact that the very economic and social structures of our societies is what's making us so depressed. And none of this is accidental. As Belen Fernandez writes, the formula is simple. Neoliberalism breeds psychological distress by working to obliterate solidarity, the very essence of humanity, while converting the right to physical and mental health care into an exclusive and costly endeavor, an arrangement that only aggravates mental health stressors for those of lesser socioeconomic means. You know, so as long as our social and economic lives are ruled by the logic of neoliberalism, there's no amount of Lexapro or cognitive behavioral therapy apps that are going to tear that system down. To riff on Marx here, it almost feels like the treatment of mental illness has become the new opiate of the masses. Now, Franson writes that the point is obviously not to get out of depression so that we can get back to the work that caused the depression to begin with. The point must be rather to destroy the material conditions that make us sick, the capitalist system that destroys people's lives, the inequalities that kill, thus creating another world together. And if we're able to reclaim our brains, then who knows, maybe we can reclaim the world and make it a lot more human and a lot less depressing. Just adds up, all the resources for this one are linked in the description. I'm also gonna make a second video expanding on some of the research I did for this to post over on Patreon, so check that out. And finally, I wanna say that if you have ever felt depressed or are feeling depressed right now, I hope you know it's not your fault that sometimes the world sucks. And it's not your fault that we live in a world that demands infinite flexibility and productivity. It's not you who sucks. It's the economic and social systems of power that suck. You're great. So let's figure out how to change those systems so you can get back to being whoever the hell you are.
I'ma dip my balls into some $1,000 dressing, 'cause I got depression.